Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
Good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. If you're catching us later on via the archives or podcast, we say welcome whenever you can get us here in the Red Zone, the Chiefs Kingdom, stretching far and wide, clear across the globe as it is, as we've had people checking in, I believe, from every continent. Didn't they take Antarctica off the continent list? I think they did. If that's the case, we've had people check in here on the Red Zone from every continent on the globe. But then again, I might be wrong. Haven't been to school in quite a while. Good news is we're not going to school today. We're going to check out what is going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll do it twofold. A little bit later on, Wallace Gilberry will be with us. One of my favorites on the roster. Good guy. Like talking to him. Smart guy. And we'll talk to Wallace Gilberry, a guy who I believe, statistically speaking, this is correct, led all defensive linemen in the NFL in sacks per snap. If that statistic does indeed exist, you might ask Josh Looney. I think Looney was the one who told me that. So we'll talk to Wallace Gilberry a little bit later on, find out what he is doing to get ready for the year as we are in the midst of OTAs. Also coming up in our next segment, Jim Holder, WTVA in Tupelo, Mississippi, will be with us as we continue to go to the source. Go to where the guys played that are draft picks of the Kansas City Chiefs and get the folks who covered them in college, get their perspective on what it is the Chiefs have now as part of the framework of their team. We'll talk to Jim Holder about, of course, Dexter McCluster and Kendrick Lewis, both of whom applied their college football skills at Ole Miss University. So we will talk to Jim here in a minute. And a nugget about Dexter McCluster before we do bring in Jim. You know, interesting. I think a lot of people, I think surprised that McCluster would end up with the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, we always like to look to the, well, to the ultimate level you can reach, which is winning the Super Bowl, and use that as our yardstick, use that as our measuring stick for what you're trying to do as a football team. That's where everybody wants to go. So looking to the Saints, now clearly they were an offensive-dominated football team, but if you look at what they had on offense, and a lot of people are scratching their head saying, Dexter McCluster, second round, I was thinking offensive lineman, or I was thinking middle linebacker, or I was thinking nose tackle. Why didn't you go that direction? I myself would probably have gone nose tackle there, but I think it's important if you take a look at what the Saints did last year offensively in comparison, Saints offense versus Chiefs offense. A couple of things. One, there were a lot of weapons there. You know, Drew Brees, phenomenal season. He's been an outstanding quarterback the last couple of years. But make no mistake about it, I'm sure all the receivers, all the runners on the Saints team look better because Drew Brees is the threat he is at quarterback. But let's also give some credit going the other way. I think Drew Brees is probably the quarterback he is because he's got good runners and good receivers around him. How good? The Saints had seven different receivers catch for over 300 yards. Seven different receivers catch for over 300 yards. Four who caught for over 500 yards. You want to talk about throwing the football? Marcus Colston, 70 for 1074. Devery Henderson, 51 for 804. Robert Meacham, 45 for 722. Jeremy Shockey, 48 for 569. Those are the four 500-yard or more receivers for the New Orleans Saints. Then add in David Thomas, 35 for 356. Reggie Bush, 47 for 335. And Pierre Thomas, 39 for 302 yards. Seven total receivers over 300 yards. That's 2,100 yards right there. Four receivers over 500 yards. That's another 800. You're at 2,900 before you get to all the yardage over those minimum requirements. By contrast, where were the Chiefs at last year? Well, again, seven 300-plus yard receivers for the New Orleans Saints. How many for the Chiefs? Just four. Chris Chambers, 608, 36 for 608. Dwayne Bowe, 47 for 589. Bobby Wade, 36 for 367. Mark Bradley, 24 for 320. That was the top four receivers for the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt Cassel clearly was a learning curve. Yes, he needs to make better decisions. But Chris Chambers led this team in receiving yards. He wasn't even on the roster when they broke camp. Didn't even get to Kansas City till midseason. And you can almost put together Bobby Wade and Chris Chambers' numbers as one guy as one kind of handed off to the other. But Mark Bradley and Bobby Wade, not really even a factor, not even on the roster for the football team at the end of the year. So it goes to show you, hey, Matt Cassel could use another receiving option. Dexter McCluster will give him that receiving option. No, he's not a 6'2", 6'3", 225-pound receiver, but he is a guy that can catch the football. He's been very productive catching the football. He needs the receivers. And what about rushers? The Chiefs only had two rushers rush for over 300 yards. Pretty easy to figure out who that was. Jamal Charles, 190 rushes for 1120. Larry Johnson, 132 for 377. The third leading rusher for the Chiefs was Matt Cassel with 189 yards. Saints, different story. They went to run the football, three guys over 300. So instead of two like the Chiefs, they had three rushers over 300. 147 carries for 793 on Pierre Thomas. Mike Bell, 172 for 654, and Reggie Bush, 70 for 390. So three at 300 plus. You heard Reggie Bush's name listed at both the receivers and the runners. And I think if you want a guy to look at how the Chiefs will use Dexter McCluster, Reggie Bush might be your guide. And when you consider that the Saints invested the number two overall pick for Reggie Bush, I got news for you, folks. 390 rushing yards and five touchdowns, 335 yards receiving and three touchdowns, and a 4.8 average, 4.8 yard per return average on punt returns for just 130 yards. That's right, 130 yards on punt returns, no kick returns, and just 725 yards from scrimmage, eight touchdowns overall. Look, I think Dexter McCluster can put up those numbers in the first year. I think he's going to put up much better numbers in the punt return. Maybe he'll be a part of the kickoff returns as well, or kickoff returns instead of punt returns. But I think those are very attainable numbers. And consider Reggie Bush is one of the more popular players in the NFL. His production level has never been huge. In fact, his best year by far was as a rookie. And this is maybe the year, this is what you shoot for if you want to think about what the high end is on Dexter McCluster. Rookie year for Reggie Bush, 565 yards rushing, 742 yards receiving. Punt returns, he returned 28 punts for 216 yards. For his career, Reggie Bush has averaged 8.1 on punt returns and has four punt return touchdowns. For his career, he has 11 receiving touchdowns, and he has 17 rushing. So he's got 32 touchdowns total in his career. I think Dexter McCluster, probably not going to be the same kind of runner because he's got 30, maybe 35 or 40 pounds, as Reggie Bush has spent a lot of time in the weight room, 30 to 40 pounds less than Reggie Bush. So I don't think you're going to see, you know, rushing statistics like that first year Reggie Bush put up on the ground where he ran for 565, the next year 581. But I think the receiving numbers can be there and maybe even higher. But that's the type of weapon you're looking at with a Dexter McCluster in this offense. We'll talk more about Dexter McCluster in our next segment with Jim Holder, who covered him. But Reggie Bush, a guy to look at, and just look at the number of options that were there, both handing off the football, the depth of quality runners that were there for the New Orleans Saints. And I think you've got that now with Jamal Charles, Thomas Jones, and Dexter McCluster. He would obviously be the third option, but a guy that can also give you some carries out of the backfield. And then seven different receivers catching for over 300 yards for the Saints. That's a lot of different places to go for go with the football if you're Drew Brees. I think Matt Cassel, this is a pick that helps him out a lot as he gives him another threat and a guy that you can dump to. Maybe just flip it to him 7-8 yards away from the quarterback, 9 yards away from the quarterback, 3 yards across the line of scrimmage, and then he can make a big play. Playmakers are at such a premium, and that's what the Chiefs hope they are getting. That's what they expect to get with the draft pick of Dexter McCluster. We'll break it down. Jim Holder, as I said, from down in Tupelo, Mississippi, covered both guys, Dexter McCluster and Kendrick Lewis. He's next with us here in the Red Zone.
Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster. The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. More ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com. Today's show is sponsored in part by Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster.
Welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. That is when we are live each and every Wednesday. Get your questions, thoughts, comments there in the chat room. Right now, we're going to get the thoughts, comments from Jim Holder, WTVA in Tupelo, Mississippi, a man who's seen Dexter McCluster and Kendrick Lewis play firsthand for a number of years for the Ole Miss Rebels. He joins us here in the Red Zone. Jim, how are you, sir?
Doing wonderful. How are you guys?
Not too bad. Let's talk about these two young men that are going to be a member, or now are a member, of the Kansas City Chiefs as the OTA workouts continue for the team today. Let's start just overall. Everything I read about these guys, and the Chiefs have certainly said it, but then when I read things elsewhere, I hear about the quality of individual these guys are. Character was a big part of the equation for the Chiefs in this year's draft, and it certainly looks like they've hit with both these guys when it comes to the character question.
I would think so. These guys, knew each other for a while. They were roommates at one point, and they were guys that just kind of stayed out of trouble. You always heard, and they were guys that were big. I know Dexter, especially in the community there in Oxford. So, that's what they were looking for. That's definitely what they got. I mean, Dexter was the guy who'd had been through some things, I think, before he ever got to Ole Miss. But he is, I believe he became born again while he was during his time in Oxford. So certainly that was something beneficial to him, and certainly helped them out as time went on in their time at Ole Miss.
All right, let's take him individually, and we'll start with Dexter McCluster, 36th overall pick. He goes in the second round. That's where most people thought he would go. I don't know if people thought he'd go high, middle. Into the second round, but second round is where most people thought he'd go. And I said this at the time of the draft, that I don't think where he, when he goes, people are going to be shocked. But I don't know any team that's going to take him that team isn't going to go, wow, or at least that the fans of that team won't go, wow, I didn't see that coming. Just 5'8", 170-pound guys, 175-pound kids that have played running back and receiver, even though you're talking about a first or third team. I saw one. He was first team All-American on one poll, third team on another one. I mean, the talent, the production was extraordinary, but I don't know anybody who goes, yeah, we're looking for 5'8", 175. So I think that size was going to scare people. Where did you think he was going to go when it was all said and done?
It's so hard to say. Now, I will tell you, in talking to Dexter before the draft, he's not an arrogant guy by any stretch of the imagination. He thought, hey, I'm planning on going first round. And again, not an arrogant guy. He's just, I mean, that's not fair. This is confidence. But obviously, he was right there close to the first round. And he was a guy, and this is the same with Kendrick, which we'll get to in a second. They were recruited by Ed Ogeron, the former coach. Of course, they were, you know, they really hit their stride under Houston Nutt. But, you know, Dexter, he had a lot of injuries the first 2 years of his career. And of course, I know he went through the combine and wasn't quite as fast as people thought he was going to be. So I think that might have hurt him a little bit. So, but he was a guy, once he got through his injuries, of course, when he was playing running back there at Ole Miss, and, of course, they didn't want to give him too many carries because of his size, but it turned out that they had some injuries at running back, so they played him a little more. They had him, you know, in the Wildcat offense, or the Wild Rebel, as they call it there at Ole Miss. So he would have gotten probably even more carries were it not for his size. But he's a guy that can, I mean, you can look at games this year against Tennessee. He had a big punt return for a touchdown that just really broke that game open. He's a guy who can change it, you know, can change a game with an exciting play or two. There's no doubt about that.
And that 5'8", 172. I mean, we saw a guy Dante Hall do remarkable things and you know, win single handedly some football games for this organization. So you know, dynamite comes in small packages is what every
kid
that's not a big kid has been told his whole life, is that dynamite comes in small packages, and he was that for Ole Miss. But, you know, and I've heard him compared to Darren Sproles a little bit, and I think that one might be a good one. I don't know if he's quite as strong as Darren Sproles, but when I saw that he did 20 reps on the bench press, I mean, at 107, I mean, that's 225 pounds. He repped it out 20 times. I compared it to some people. I said, hey, Jared Allen, who's one of the best defensive ends in the NFL, did 14 reps when he came out. So he's not big, but he's plenty strong. And I think he showed that playing in the toughest conference in the country, did he not?
I would say so, and I would also say about him, you know, before this season started for Ole Miss, there were a lot of expectations there and expectations they hadn't had there in many, many years. They didn't quite, and still had a good year, just didn't quite live up to those lofty expectations. And Jevin Snead, their quarterback, was the guy who got it when they were kind of pushing for a possible Heisman bid. And I think towards the end of the season, people were wondering why Dexter McCluster wasn't the guy who got pushed more for the Heisman. No, he's a guy who can really do it all. And people don't think about that. You look at him how quick he is, how fast he is. You don't think about his strength, but you're right. He is strong, no doubt about it. And I think that's what that's why as time has gone on, he was able to be used more as a running back and didn't quite suffer. You'll have to go through the injuries like you would have in years past.
Yeah, I'll make clear. I'm not trying to say he's, you know, the bust, Jerome Bettis.
No, not at all.
He is a solidly built young man. And we're talking to Jim Holder right now from WTVA down in Tupelo. All right, the other part that I'm interested in, because I think a lot of people, you know, if you look at some of the books, he was listed as a running back because he had over, you know, almost 1,200 yards rushing last year. But he also was kind of primarily a wideout early on. They've always used him, handed him the football. He was a running back in high school. I think then because of the size, they said, let's get him to wideout. What do you remember? You mentioned the coaching change. Was it as simple as that he was viewed as too small to carry the ball under the previous regime, and then Houston Nutt came in and said, I'm going to put the best athlete on the field, and I'm going to find a way to get him the ball the most? Is that where, you know, he kind of made the transition to becoming more of a running back than a receiver?
Right, and like I said, with the Wild Rebel bringing that in, that was certainly, you know, Houston definitely wanted to get him on the field as much as he could. I think Ed Ogeron did too, but the problem is, you know, he just, I remember when he was a freshman, his first game, he had some, you know, kick returns, punt returns, and was, you know, he was basically a receiver at that time, more or less. I mean, not really a running back, and they used him a lot more. You know, a lot more doing that, and I think, you know, the thought was that was what he was going to do. And then, of course, he had the injuries. And in fairness to Ed Ogeron, you know, when, you know, McCluster was out for a good part of his freshman and sophomore seasons, like basically the end of his freshman year, beginning of his sophomore season. So that, you know, you take that out of it, you know, that you think what they could have done had they had him. So I think once he got back, he was healthy. You know, that, and of course, like you said, the coaching change with Nutt coming in there and using and able to use that Wildcat offense. Then you're looking like, okay, we can do this. And they even had a couple of situations where they had him throw the ball out of the backfield. Wouldn't recommend that a whole lot with Kansas City, but he was even able to do that a couple of times. So, you know, it just depends on what you've got and who you've got, and that's the way they look at it.
And injuries were one of the question marks around him when he came into the league. And I remember, and I think that was even fueled by some of the broadcasts of his games. I remember watching Ole Miss games and, you know, they said, well, Houston Nutt, he doesn't want to get him too many touches. You know, and the kid was having 31, 32. I think one game he had like 36 touches. So clearly he was showing that he could hold up, you know, under it. But I think just the natural mindset. Forget about if you're 172 pounds. If you're 230 pounds, 30-plus touches is a lot, and you've got to always guard against overusing a guy. I think it became a bigger subject, at least it seems to me, because he was undersized. And we heard that again about Darren Sproles, who played in our backyard at K-State. Now, obviously, he's done great things for the San Diego Chargers, and that kid touched the ball a ton as well. Was that the injuries, though? Were they kind of isolated? You mentioned end of freshman year, beginning of sophomore year. Other than that, was he pretty much healthy the rest of the way?
Pretty much the rest of the way. There were a couple of games. I mean, they had a couple of games that were, when you get to a cupcake part of the schedule, non-conference schedule, they had a couple of games against what I call the old 1AA, I guess, playoff championship series. But anyway, so there was even a game I remember even late last year where he didn't even play, and it wasn't because he was injured. They just figured there was no point in playing him in a game like that when it was pretty much obvious they would win that game. So, of course, it happened to be a game that was later in the season. But, yeah, and I would think after, he was out, like I said, a good chunk of those two seasons. I mean, he basically, the beginning of his freshman season, played a good bit, and then he was out, and then it wasn't really until about halfway through his sophomore season when he came back and was able to do anything. So, that sits in the back of your mind. And, of course, Houston Nutt, of course, had a chance not only to coach him, but coached against him in those years before that when he was at Arkansas. So he knew what he knew what he was getting, and no doubt he didn't want to. But it got to the point last year also where the offense really struggled at times. I mean, McCluster and Shea Hodge were really his best receivers, sneak receivers that is. So with that in mind, you got to the point where they were going to have to use him and carry him as much as they possibly could.
And to sum up on Dexter McCluster, I mean, we're talking about a kid who's second all-time in yards from scrimmage from Ole Miss, and the first kid to be back-to-back. Now, part of this is because he ended up playing in the Cotton Bowl in back-to-back years, but I still think it's impressive that just back-to-back MVPs of bowl games, then the fact that it's a high-level bowl like the Cotton Bowl, then the fact that the last guy to do it was Doak Walker speaks pretty highly. I mean, his resume is complete, no doubt, coming out of Ole Miss, and we'll see what he does now with the Chiefs. Let's move to Kendrick Lewis, pick number 130 out of the fifth round, the safety. Safe to say that he is – well, maybe it's not safe to say. Maybe I'll just ask you. I'll let you describe him first. What kind of safety, how would you describe Kendrick Lewis?
Well, he's a pretty quick safety, a guy that can just, definitely hit you if he has to. The thing about him was he started off, and again, he's another guy that came under Ogeron. He started out as a receiver out of New Orleans, and he was, he was well recruited and came in, but he really transitioned. And he's another guy that was a kick returner, punt returner, and still did that from time to time at Ole Miss. And certainly, he was a guy who obviously not as explosive as a Dexter McCluster, but even on that side of the ball, could certainly do some things. And he had several pass plays. He could make some plays when he needed to, but he was certainly a solid guy. And when they made the transition, I thought, well, they're taking away a great receiver. But it turned out he was certainly did the job at safety for the Rebels.
Yeah, he did a great job. And a lot of people, I heard some people say, well, how good is he? He went in the fifth round. I said, hold on, you got to understand the numbers here. There are roughly 9,500 kids playing college football, and each year only 30 or so of them get drafted, 225, right, depending upon how many compensatory picks there are. That's an amazing – if you get drafted, you're the best of the best in college football, and Kendrick Lewis was. And that's one of the other things I was kind of intrigued to find is how highly recruited he was. He really was one of the best players in the country coming out of high school, was he not?
Yeah, he was. I don't remember the name of the high school out of New Orleans, but he's from that area. And there was another guy who was on the team just a year or two before. He is a guy by the name of Mike Wallace, who, of course, is now with the Pittsburgh Steelers and had a solid rookie season. So he was basically right in there with that group, some receivers coming in. There was another guy, I forget the name of the other guy who was in there with him, but there was another guy named Chris Collins, who a few years before him, and I think he was from that area as well. So, New Orleans is certainly one of those areas that has produced some good talent over the years, and there's plenty of them around the country, of course. But I thought, well, that's strange. I'm sure he doesn't like that move, but turned out to be a good move. A guy who, if you've been a receiver, you know what receivers do, and that's certainly what helped him out.
And what was the thought process, if you remember, in transitioning from wideout to safety?
I think the point was they had so many injuries in the defensive backfield at that time. They basically just had to. And I'm trying to remember who at that time. This has been three or 4 years ago. Who was injured at that time? But I think it was more or less out of necessity that he got moved over that way. And they had happened to have enough receivers. They thought, well, we can take him, move him here. And back in those days, Ogeron was basically like, there's no depth chart. Whoever's playing the best, that day is going to play, and you can't, don't think you're settled in as a starter or anything like that. There's no relaxing or anything like that. So I think he was at, trying to get who he could on the field, and basically just out of necessity at that time.
Is he more, you look at the interception totals, the Chiefs obviously took another safety with their first pick, number five, Eric Berry, who had huge interception totals. Kendrick Lewis had good interception totals, but not huge interception totals, only six. Is he more of a run stopper?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he can come up and hit you and all that, and he's one of those guys really just going to, if nothing else, just kind of prevent, the big play from happening. Now, don't get me wrong, he did get burned occasionally, especially when he first started playing safety. But as time went on, he was a sophomore going to that position. And as time went on, he improved. But I will say from time to time, at least early on in his days playing safety, he did get burned occasionally. But like I said, by his senior year, you certainly didn't see that as much.
And if you're going to stop the run, you might as well be the best at it. I know he led Ole Miss in tackles back-to-back years, and I don't remember what the stat was, how long that had been done, or if he was the first guy to do it ever, or what it was. But back-to-back years leading the team in tackles, I mean, that is impressive. Again, this is in the SEC, not some rinky-dink conference that's out there.
Right, exactly. Of course, he was following a guy, and of course, the guy who had led in tackles a few years before that was Patrick Willis, one of his teammates, who's now, of course, 49ers. And you were talking about the draft, and this is my take. You were talking about the draft earlier. This is my take on all that. People say, well, why did so-and-so go to so-and-so? I mean, as you know, different teams have different needs. Just because somebody's the best available, quote-unquote, at a certain position, they don't, that's not necessarily a position they need. If a quarterback's the best thing available, if a team's got a, solid couple of quarterbacks, why would they waste that pick? So I think again, my take back on that, but I think Kendrick Lewis. I mean, I think he's a guy who could definitely surprise and could very well be a steal for the Chiefs.
He looks to me like a guy that is definitely going to play some special teams and be an athlete that can go down there, but also has a chance to come in and compete. I mean, the Chiefs have a desperate need at safety. I mean, for two safeties, not just one. So he doesn't have to beat out Eric Berry to get on the field. He just has to beat out the the predecessors, and he could make an impact right away for this team at the safety spot and not just at special teams. So, I'm with you. I mean, I think this is, everyone always looks past these guys because we only know the names that are regurgitated over and over again for about those top 30 picks or really even the top 20 picks. But there are some really good football players that will be found in later rounds, and he might be one of them. And you mentioned, is anybody, and I guess this speaks to why there was a regime change there, there's some really good football players that have come out of Ole Miss here of late. Throw on Michael Orr as well, who we all know about now with the blind side. Even guys that, Jevon Snead didn't have the great final year that he wanted before heading off to the pros. I mean, there's been some really talented football players come out of Ole Miss, and, the Chiefs just added two of them.
Certainly did, and I will say this, and people forget this state of Mississippi. I mean, not only Ole Miss. I mean, Mississippi State has had some. I'll plug them as well. As a matter of fact, they've got Jarius Norwood, who's currently a running back with the Atlanta Falcons, some other guys as well. And talking about Ole Miss, Parae Jerry, a guy who was actually missed his rookie campaign. Mm-hmm. He was injured early on. So, if you look down over the years, if you think back, you've had. Again, another plug here for Mississippi. You got Brett Favre, played at Southern Miss. The late Steve McNair played at Alcorn State. You want to go back to Walter Payton and Jerry Rice at some small schools like Jackson State, Mississippi Valley State. You can find some solid football players down here.
Well, and I think was it Sports Illustrated did the study on, and I know per capita Mississippi blew everybody away, but I think didn't they even have the most pros of when you add football and basketball together, they had the most pros of any state, or maybe I'm just thinking of the per capita because it would seem like the sheer population of a Texas or a California would overwhelm them. But I know per capita, they were by far number one.
Yeah, and I will tell you, you were talking about basketball a second ago. Mississippi State, for example, they've had a problem of they've had so many players they've recruited that were so good they either don't show up because they've gone straight to the NBA or they've left early to go to the NBA. So a good problem to have for any school. And, you know, if you can get some players in at least for a couple of years, it can certainly help you out. But certainly just a lot of great talent down here.
We're talking to Jim Holder, WTVA in Tupelo, Mississippi. Jim, great stuff. Before I let you go, my final four, just four quickies, four little fun ones. Okay. You let me know the first thing that pops into your head, and we'll start with this. Who's bigger in Oxford, Archie or Eli?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Archie, I will say this. The speed limit is 18, but I would say actually these days Eli, simply because he's currently playing, but Archie's always going to be king.
Okay.
We'll get a slight edge to Archie.
Okay. Are people still watching the movie The Blind Side?
A few of them are. Very big when it first came out here, but now it's coming out of DVD and everything else, so yes.
Yes, I bought it for a Mother's Day gift for my mom. It's one of her favorite movies, yes. Great movie. I really enjoyed it as well. I don't want to act like I didn't like it. I thought it was an outstanding movie. I read the book, actually, before I saw the movie. It's an entertaining book as well by Michael Lewis.
Yeah.
All right, next, if the Big Ten expands, should the SEC expand as well?
I don't think they should. I got to be honest with you. They've got 12. I mean, you got two divisions of six. I would say no. I think you got to... You know, I don't like messing with stuff like that. I think they keep them.
The rumor we heard was Miami and Florida State would be their targets. They'd look to lock down the state of Florida by picking those two up and then maybe move on to Clemson and Georgia Tech or even North Carolina if they were to go up 4-16. Some two of those three would be their targets, and they would basically raid the ACC. If you lock down Florida, is that a good start?
I think so, and, you know, I think before they ever added way back, I guess 20 years ago when they added Arkansas and South Carolina, mm-hmm. I think Miami and Florida State, at least one of the two, if not both, were targets back then, so certainly you would think they would now. I kind of like Clemson and Georgia Tech, though. To me, it seemed to be more natural. Georgia Tech was a former SEC member mm-hmm. way back, I think, in the 60s, so... But you're certainly not hurting by getting Florida State and Miami. That's for sure to go along with Florida already in there.
Yeah, either way, however the SEC wants to proceed, they're going to be just fine when it's all said and done. All right, and when it's all said and done, who will be remembered as a better pro? This is a little projection on your part. Deuce McAllister or Dexter McCluster, the two leading yardage gainers from scrimmage in Ole Miss history?
Wow, I'm gonna say, hey, we've been talking about him, Dexter McCluster. Why not? Deuce had a great career, and... certainly nothing to be, had a great career with the Saints, but I'm just going to, we'll be optimistic and say it's going to be Dexter, going to do even better.
Yeah, that sounds good to us, because you're on here with the Red Zone, so we're wanting
right.
it to be the Chief, right? We don't need it to be the Saint. Hey, great stuff, Jim. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for your time.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels, that a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer, 120, a jet engine, that studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster, more ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking, with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com, and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at kcchiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs cheerleader swimsuit calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
You're listening to the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you. Again, our thanks to Jim Holder, WTVA, and Tupelo, Mississippi, giving us the breakdown on Dexter McCluster and Kendrick Lewis. In a minute, we're going to talk with Chiefs defensive end Wallace Gilberry, a young man who was second on the team in sacks. And, you know, how good does the defense of the Kansas City Chiefs have to get to become a Super Bowl caliber defense? Well, that's a question that we've gone over many times. Overall, the average Super Bowl championship defense, it took a hit this year. It's the third time in the last 11 years, going back to the Rams in 99, for the third time a defense ranked over 20 won the Super Bowl this year, with the Saints at number 25 overall, knocking the average defensive rank down to 9.7, so basically number 10 in the NFL, between 9 and 10 in the NFL, the defensive ranks over the last 11 years, starting with the Saints working backwards, 25, 1, 7, 21, 4, 9, 7, 1, 24, 2, and 6. Eight of the 11 Super Bowl champions, have had top 10 defenses. Included in that have been another five of the 11 that have been top five defenses. So defense has been the order of the business. The Saints got it done being an offensive football team, and very similar, well, somewhat similar, the 25th overall defense they made up for by having the number one overall offense. If you go back to 06 when the Colts won it, when Manning led the Colts over the Bears in the Super Bowl, they had the number 21 defense and number three offense. So you've got to be balanced out with a great offense. It's the 01 Pats that really stand out, although in 3 and 4 when they won the Super Bowl, they kind of proved that maybe they were better. Certainly by the end of the year, they were better than these statistics, but they were number 24 defensively and number 19 offensively. So basically speaking, they're the exception. If you're not going to be so hot on one side of the ball, you better be great on the other. But what about the pass rush? That's the overall defensive ranks. Where do the Chiefs need to get to? We'll talk to Wallace Gilberry about getting to the quarterback. 22 sacks only for the Chiefs. Now, that is a 120% increase over the year before. They had 10 sacks. If they can do that again, they'll be pushing 50 sacks this year. How many sacks does it take to be a Super Bowl championship quarterback? Well, the bare minimum is 24, and it's those 06 Indianapolis Colts. That was the lowest number that was out there. So you can win a Super Bowl with just a couple more sacks. It's been done in the last 11 years with a couple more sacks than the Chiefs had last year. But statistically speaking, it generally takes better than that. The average Super Bowl champion since 1999 has had 43 sacks on the year, so the Chiefs pretty much need to double their sack output if they are going to be an average Super Bowl defense as far as getting to the quarterback. Now, the Saints only sacked the quarterback 35 times, but that's not that far under the average at 35, but it should be pointed out with as many points as they put on the board, as fast as they scored, there were more opportunities for them to sack the quarterback. In fact, the leading, and if you might remember this from last year, the leading quarterback sacking team in Super Bowl, in recent Super Bowl history, the last 11 years, was those Rams in 99. Their offense scored so fast, but the other team on the board so often and had them playing from behind so often that they were throwing the football all the time. I would dare say that teams probably gave the Rams more opportunities to sack the quarterback, to pressure the quarterback, to get after it with the pass rush than any team in the history of the NFL. But that would be coming off the top of my head. 57 sacks for the Rams in 99. That is the high water mark over the last 11 years. There are two other teams that have topped 50. The 07 Giants had 52 sacks, and they were a decent offensive team, but a run the football and play defense type of mentality. They were great at getting after the quarterback when you compare how many times they got to rush the passer. With a 10-6 record, they weren't always playing catch-up in those, or always playing from in front with the other team trying to play catch-up on them, giving them more sack opportunities. And then just a great pass rush team. A couple of years ago, Pittsburgh Steelers, 51 sacks in 2008. Those are the three teams over 50. But the low water mark, Colts in 06 at 24. So the Chiefs have got to get a little bit better. The other low water marks, then you jump up to Baltimore in 2000, only 35. And the Saints last year with only 35. The Saints made up for it by having a great offense. Baltimore, that 35 is clearly a statistical anomaly. It means that was one of the greatest defenses of all time that took everybody off the field after a three and out. If every possession you only had one third down, your chances at getting after the quarterback are diminished. Your number of opportunities to get to the quarterback are diminished. I dare say with the Ravens' excellent rushing attack that year with Jamal Lewis and Priest Holmes, coupled with a defense that just got you off the field immediately, there were probably very few opportunities to sack the quarterback, but only 35 sacks for the Baltimore Ravens in 2000. So the Chiefs, if you want to go to the average, they need to double that sack total, and they'll be at the average. One of the guys who will help them out, Wallace Gilberry, he's up next in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left of the fullback, and a great block springs over the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
Tailgate Kansas City!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Real sports fans can tell you all about decibels. That a crowd yelling at 105 decibels is like a jackhammer. 120, a jet engine. That studies directly link team performance to crowd noise. Finally, they'll tell you to go to Ticketmaster, with more ways to get you into the game, including buying and selling seats from season ticket holders and other fans. Because for your voice to be heard, you have to be there. Ticketmaster. More ways in.
Buy and sell Chiefs tickets with Chiefs Ticket Exchange by Ticketmaster at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. Right now, we're going to talk to Chiefs defensive end Wallace Gilberry is with us in the Red Zone. Wallace, how you doing, man?
I'm blessed. How are you, Soren?
Not too bad. Feel good to be back at work, and getting out on the field. I know it's not in pads and it's not real football, but it is the beginning of the preparation for the 2010 season. Does it feel good to be back out on the field?
It feels great. We've definitely been working out hard in the off season with Coach Mike Clark and, definitely doing some good things out there. But like I said, it kind of gets you in the feel of playing football again when you're out there with the coaches and the O&D and we're having fun competing, and it feels good.
All right, and Mike Clark, you're talking about the strength and conditioning part of the equation, getting yourself physically ready to play the game. I'm very interested in the work you've been doing this past off season, because last year you had a very productive season for this football team, but at 265 pounds, you are not the prototype defensive end. We talked about this towards the end of last year, you and I, and I'm curious, have you been lifting and eating everything in sight to bulk up and get bigger to fit the more?
not necessarily eating everything in sight, but I'll definitely put on some weight. Right now, I'm about 280 pounds right now, and okay. I feel good. I feel strong. I feel fast. And, just the offseason, that's what it's all about, getting better than last year. And that's definitely what I'm trying to improve on. There's a lot of things that I need to improve on. And definitely, every day in the weight room, I take it as an opportunity to get better and to help this team, get in the right direction.
And that, to me, was the question was, were you going to be, strengthening and looking to get bigger to fit the position you're in, or were you going to be leaning down and maybe standing up and playing some outside linebacker? It sounds like you found a home then at defensive end. Is that correct?
I mean, you never know. I mean, I'm still lean. Like, when people see me, they think I'm still 260. So, you never know. I don't know, what the plan is, what my future is here in Kansas City. But whatever it is, I'm going to give 150%, and hopefully I can give them what they're looking for.
All right. Now, I was told this statistic. You tell me if you may not have heard it, but if you have, if it's true or not. You led NFL defensive linemen last year in sacks per snap. Is that correct?
I have no idea.
Really? Okay. Somebody told me that. Now, I don't know if it's true or if they maybe got their statistics mixed up. I don't know where you would find that statistic to look it up.
I know I didn't play in as many as I thought I did towards the end of the season, once you get the percentage of plays. And I didn't have nearly – I believe I missed more sacks than I actually accumulated. But at the same time, that's one thing I'm going to have to improve on this offseason, finishing every play. Using different techniques to get to the quarterback. Last year I was semi-successful, definitely hasn't arrived nowhere close to it. But this year, Coach Todd Haley's brought in some guys, and, they definitely know, how to get to the quarterback. And I just try to take everything in and like I said, give them what they're looking for.
Now, so you don't know if that statistic's true, but there had to be – you had to feel pretty good about establishing yourself as a legitimate pass rusher in the NFL. Whether that stat's true or not, you definitely, when you were on the field, were able to make an impact. Does that make you feel – I don't want to say comfortable, like, oh, I can just put my feet up and relax because
never that. That's never possible. Even when you got all the money in the world, you can never get comfortable because always somebody is chomping at the bits, wanting your job. And I've always been that guy. I've been an underdog my whole life, and I don't think I'm nowhere – I mean – people say, Walsh had a pretty good year last year, but I don't think I had nowhere close to the year that I'm looking forward to having this year and that I was capable of really, executing last year. So I'm definitely thrilled about this year, thrilled about getting bigger and stronger and faster and being able to understand this new scheme that we got going on and like I say, put us in position and give the fans something to cheer about.
Last year was your second year on the team, and I guess the point I was getting at was do you feel with the combination of, one, it being your third year in the organization after starting out with the Giants and then coming over, I think it was in August of 2008, third year on the team and now some production under your belt, do you feel more like, yeah, I fit, this is my home, I'm secure here, and all I got to do is work on being a bigger part of the defense because I have a big future within this organization?
The secure part, not so much. Being a fridge, and you know that there's always somebody that can easily take your place, so to speak. So I've never had a sense of security, but I do feel like I'm a part of the team now, and I feel like this is where I want to start and end my career here in Kansas City because, like you said, the team is young, I'm young, and we're definitely heading in the right direction. So I'm definitely thrilled for the opportunity the coaches have given me last year and the opportunity they're giving me this year to go out there and, like I said, give the fans something to cheer about and help the defense.
All right, what has it been like? And we're talking to Wallace Gilberry, Chiefs defensive end here in the red zone. What's it been like to work with Coach Romeo Crennel?
It's fun. It's fun. He's a guy, like you say, he's a definitely hands-on guy. He has the vision, and that's the way he wants to execute, and you can only respect that. I love, like I was, I planned to save him my last year, and when you play with somebody who wants perfection and who demands it, it kind of adds a different excitement to the game. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
All right, you mentioned playing under Nick Saban your last year at Alabama. Nick Saban was D coordinator for the Cleveland Browns when Bill Belichick was the head coach for the mm-hmm. Cleveland Browns. So there's a tie there. And then obviously Romeo Crennel was D coordinator under Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots.
I had no idea, but it's funny, you know, like people say when you get out and you travel, it's a small world, and mm-hmm. the NFL is the same way. It's a small world, but most every coach is connected somehow through some kind of route or some kind of lifeline. So I mean. And to have those coaches, you know, to me, to be one of those coaches, I feel like I'm capable of completing any task that's given to me.
And what I'm curious is, how similar are they as coaches, Coach Saban and Coach Crennel?
Well, you know, just OTAs, you know, Coach Romeo Crennel, he hasn't got fired up yet. You know, I've seen the good and bad of Coach Saban. You know, definitely he's a guy of demands and want to. So I haven't. You know, Coach Romeo, he's really, you know, kind of laid back right now, trying to understand, you know, understand the defense, understand the philosophies. But, you know, I'm quite sure it's gonna come out soon.
It's schematically, and I'm not asking you, you know, what the assignments are, but just schematically, are there a lot of similarities between the two?
Oh yeah, there is. You know, like you said, they kind of cut from the same cloth. So there's definitely gonna be something in common. You know, every guy and every man puts his own twist and his own deal on each thing they do. So I'm quite sure there'd be some similarity and some things would be different also.
What kind of reaction went through you when you heard that Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss were being added to the staff? Two guys. I know Charlie's got – I know both of them have three Super Bowl rings with New England. I know Romeo's got at least one, if not two, with the Giants. I'm not sure how many other championship hardware Coach Weiss has. But, for you know, being a part of the team, when you found out that the organization was landing two of the top assistant coaches in the history of the NFL, what was your reaction?
I was thrilled. You know, like you said, when you can get that much firepower and under one roof, the sky's the limit. And like I said, and not only me, I mean, and you can just feel it when you step into the facility. Like, everybody's really excited, and the atmosphere and the attitude is really different this year. And I can honestly say that. And like we said, we have almost the whole team's here working. So I mean, guys are willing and wanting to get better and wanting to get, like you said, this great coaching.
You mentioned almost the whole team is there. Two guys of note, two of the veteran leaders on this team, Mike Vrabel and Brian Waters, are there. They weren't there last year. What does that mean? What does that send?
I mean, it's funny you said that, Pitch, because I walked up to Vrabel today and told him, you know, they don't know how much that means to guys like me and really guys like who, you know, us young guys who, because we know they have families and it's not really mandatory, but to see those guys here and it means a lot, and it definitely says where the team is headed.
Does it? Do you get the feel that this team is the playoff? I mean, last year was clearly a year of transition, but this year two, that there are legitimate goals and that the playoffs are what this team is focused on.
That's with any team. You always want the big, the big show, the big showdown. But we just take it one day at a time. You know, me personally, I'm trying to get better in every aspect I can to help my position and to help the defensive line and the defense itself, you know, be successful. But it's a puzzle. And it's not definitely not going to get put together in one day, one week, you know. But just the fact that, like I said, the veteran guys are here trying and participating, it means a lot.
But is there a different feeling now that everybody's on the same page, that this is a year that this team can go win?
I would say that. But I'm not the guy that, you know, to shoot out expectations. I don't do that. But I'm definitely going to say that. Like I said, the atmosphere and the energy is totally different than it was last year. And me personally, I'm looking forward to it.
The team, the overall physical condition of the team, that was a big focus in OTAs last year, Todd Haley's first year. I heard his comment the other day that it's a lot easier this year when everybody, you know, knew where, you know, the organization wanted him to be physically and more in mm-hmm. shape, that you can hit the ground running. Can you tell a difference? Is it obvious that this team is in better physical condition this year?
Oh yeah. Like you say, it kind of, like you say, when you don't have to worry about, you know, making weight and just going out and just playing ball, it makes everything easy.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never been that guy, you know, to worry about losing weight. My whole thing has been trying to gain weight, you know, and be able to hold my own. But you know, when you can just go out and you're not worried about being winded and just playing ball, it adds a different aspect and a different level to your performance.
Do you enjoy the fact that you're one of the few human beings on Earth that has to worry about gaining weight?
You know, it's funny. I do, but at the same time, you know, I wanna. I'm not. I'm not definitely not. You know, set in stone to where I know I don't have to worry about losing weight or gaining weight. You know, I'm just trying to get better and just work on my technique, because a lot of things, you know, and on the football field, you know, what you don't lack in size, you know, your technique can make up for. So I know if I improve on my technique, it'll better me as a defensive end for this defense.
And I know you're not just trying to put on any weight. You're trying to put on positive weight. You know,
exactly, exactly. You know, I can definitely go out and go to McDonald's and Burger King every day, you know, and just, you know, pig out. But that's not what it's all about. You know, I want to, you know, keep the lean and keep the muscle mass coming on, because like you say, I can easily gain 30 to 40 pounds. But who wants to play with that much extra unnecessary weight?
Well, let me say this, enjoy it, because the alternative is when you get old and fat. Yeah,
it's coming.
Yeah, and you try to go the other way. So definitely enjoy your time right now. Positive mass or bad mass, it's definitely better to be in the gain mode than it is lose mode. I will tell you that much. What do you think about some of the new guys on the rosters?
I'm excited. I'm excited, Petro. You know, I mean, we definitely hit the SEC hard this year with Eric Berry,
Dexter McCluster, Javier Arenas.
Dexter McCluster, I want to call him McCluster for some reason.
Yeah.
And you know, my counterpart, Javier Arenas from Bama. So, I mean, I'm excited. You know, we got a lot of speed. And those guys, you know, was the top of their class, the top of their position, the top of their conference and everything they did. And even Kendrick from Mississippi State, I believe.
Yep. Ole Miss. No, he's another Ole Miss guy, the safety.
Yeah, Ole Miss guy from Ole Miss. So, I'm excited. I mean, those guys, and just look in their eyes, they want to learn, they're eager to learn, and I can't wait to see, you know, how good they perform this year.
Did you watch the draft? Are you the kind of guy that gets into that thing?
No, not really. You know, I didn't watch it. You know, I take that back. I watched the first round. You know, I'm always, you know, excited to see those guys go up to the podium and, you know, show emotions and just, you know, the fact that they're, you know, accomplished their goals as far as making it to the NFL. But I mean, I'm quite sure, just like I know now, it's a long road. You know, it's more so not easy to, you know, to get here than it is to maintain. So I wish all those guys the best, not even on our team, all the guys around the league the best, and, you know, and just excited for all of them.
Do you and Brody go up to Javier Arenas and put your arm around him, say, all right, come on with us, Tide?
Oh, that's the first thing I did, you know, I just wanted to be comfortable, just let him know that he definitely has, you know, friends in the program, and like I said, matter of fact, I'm supposed to join him for lunch here in a minute, and, you know, Javier's a great guy. He loves the work. He has a great work ethic, and I mean, I can't say enough good things about the guy. I host him on his when he's a rookie, not rookie, excuse me, a freshman coming to Bama. So I mean, we got a lot of history together.
All right, Wallace Gilberry is with us. I'll give you our final four quickies to wrap things up, and let's start with this. How much did you enjoy getting a chance to go to Fort Riley and checking out, you know, America's finest that defend this country?
Let me tell you something, Petro. That it definitely changed my life. You know, that's one of the most amazing. I've been to a lot of places. And for that gym, and I'm going to say gym, to be in our backyard here in Kansas, it's amazing. Yeah. One of the beautiful places I've ever been to. And you know, to see the Buffalo Soldier Monument, the new college that they, I mean, their college is almost better than the one that I went to, University of Alabama. It is top-notch. You know, they have a lot of artifacts in there, a lot of paintings. It was amazing. Definitely glad that, you know, the defensive line was selected to go up there and to experience that.
And I think I said Fort Riley. It was Fort Leavenworth. Fort Riley out by Manhattan, Kansas, but Fort Leavenworth. Yeah, I heard everybody had a great time, and it was certainly great videos and everything we saw that got sent back. And, of course, you can see it right here at kcchiefs.com, a lot of the time that was spent up there, the D-line.
I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, what the qualifications to go up and visit, but if whoever out there listening, if you ever get the opportunity, that's definitely a place that you want to see before you leave here, because it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is really impressive. All right, next question. What do you think about Thomas Jones' guns?
Yeah, you know, he's one of the hardest working guys in the business. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the first one in the weight room and the last one to leave every day.
But he's got to have the best biceps on the team, doesn't he?
They're huge. You know, we got some guys that, you know, that can compete with him, but he has some guns on him.
Yeah, they are impressive and not afraid to show them off. I'm sure we'll see a lot of photos here on the website of Thomas Jones when he practices. The guns are on display. It is a gun show.
They're on display. They're definitely on showcase.
Yeah. All right. So we'll look for those here on the website. All right. Did you have a wager with Derek Johnson on the national championship game?
I don't know if I could talk about that.
Okay. Friendly.
But it was. It was a joyous day for me.
Okay, to say the least. And last question, did you and Brody watch the game together?
No, we didn't. I was back home. Okay. I had my son a birthday party the other game, and I'm not sure where Brody was, but we definitely talked about it. And like I say, it's one of the best things that could happen for our program, and you know, and besides Mark Ingram winning the Heisman.
Yeah.
It was a great year for Alabama.
It certainly was. Well, Roll Tide, Wallace. We always appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good! Ryan Succop wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
In today's hectic world, it's hard enough to find time to manage all your commitments and still find time to pursue a higher education. But at Columbia College, we make it easier. Classes are just 8 weeks long, and you can earn your associate, bachelor's, or master's degree on campus, online, or both. Apply now to Columbia College in Kansas City at www.ccis.edu/about-time. That's www.ccis.edu/about-time.
Hey, Chiefs fans. I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at KCChiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At KCChiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
Are you looking for that perfect gift? Maybe it's a birthday, a holiday, or just looking for something special for that extra special Chiefs fan in your life? Well, we have it. The 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar is now available at KCChiefs.com. This 16-month calendar features the entire Chiefs cheerleader squad in swimsuits shot in Red Hot Jamaica. Get your hands on the 16-month 2010 Chiefs Cheerleader Swimsuit Calendar online at the Chiefs Pro Shop at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
All right, wrapping things up here in the Red Zone, Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. I want to thank everybody involved, all our guests. Jim Holder from WTVA down in Mississippi giving us the breakdown on Dexter McCluster and Kendrick Lewis. Wallace Gilberry joining us here in the Red Zone. Remember, you can get your tickets. Season just around the corner as OTAs are in full swing. 888-99-CHIEFS. That's 888-99-CHIEFS or 888-992-4433. Or you can just right here at the website, kcchiefs.com. See everything you need as far as grabbing yourself season tickets. And, of course, right around the corner, the Chiefs charity game preseason benefiting the CCVI, the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired. Coming up as well as you get your chance to take a look at the Chiefs, their new addition, as it should be exciting. The more I hear about the draft picks, the more excited I am. So that's going to do it for us.
for Curtis Siebold, Adam Pellegrino, and Brad Young. Soren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Soren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.